I'm Scott Patton, your co-host. Hey, Martin, how are you doing today?
Yes, this is Martin Pizzella, your other co-host. I am doing well. I am still genetically intact as a human.
Okay, so we haven't put any frog's DNA in you or anything yet?
Nope, no gills.
No gills? No.
Nope.
You can't swim, you can't hop around or croak at night?
Oh, I can do all of that.
The last few podcasts, we've been talking about how to get sick, because we felt, you know, we spent the last couple of years talking about how to get well, and we thought, you know, we need to be politically correct and go over to the other side and talk about that. And one of our listeners, was it from Dubai?
United Arab Emirates, yep.
Emailed us, contacted us, and said, you know, I've got some concerns about genetically modified foods. And, of course, that is on our list. It's just a little bit further down the list, and we decided to bump it up and talk about that today. In fact, we think that we'll be lucky if we can get just that into today's episode. It might take a couple episodes to talk about all these wonderfully genetically modified foods. And I think, Martin, where we need to start with is, like, what do we mean by genetically modified foods? Because my dad used to take a branch from, you know, like the Red Delicious tree, and he would stick it onto the Golden Delicious tree and that sort of stuff. And, you know, so... But that's not what we're talking about, right?
No, that's grafting, and that's essentially staying within one species. That's hybridization, or, you know, like you could actually do that, take pollen from one apple tree and pollinize the other flowers or flowering apples on another tree until it creates the apples, and then you can graft that onto another tree and so on. All of that is within the same species.
And that's actually a natural type of thing that happens. I know that in the Okanagan in BC, there was this orchard, and this guy found this tree growing, I guess, outside of the line of the trees, and was going to pull it down, and he noticed that it was a little bit different than the other trees, so he left it, and the apple that tree gave was a unique new apple, and it tasted really good. So I guess there was pollination from the different types of trees around, and all of a sudden this tree became, you know, I'm not sure if it just grew or you know what all the details were, but he was very excited about this very yummy, delicious apple. So he had to be very careful with the tree, because it was the only one in the world, right? And
yes,
he grew more trees and more trees, did whatever he did so that he got a nice little crop going, and I guess he just sold it, you know, out of his little market thing. And then people said, wow, this is really good, I want more. And then other farmers were like, what's this apple? And now it's quite a pop, you know, it's like 4 or 5 years later now, it's quite a popular little apple that we see in the grocery store. So what we're talking about is not, he didn't genetically modify that tree to make that apple. It was part of nature's way of creation.
That's right. Yes. And the difference is the old traditional selective breeding, where we take the best specimens we have of the particular
species,
and we select, right? I mean, this is the extreme of it is what humans have done to dogs. You know, they have bred similar dogs to one another until they've created these bizarre things where you can have something between a Chihuahua and a Great Dane.
Mm.
All of them were related to the wolf and coyote. And
right.
And fox, I suppose.
Right.
But it's not natural for a wolf to mate with a coyote.
Mm-hmm.
Although you can mate a wolf with a dog. And similarly, you can mate a horse with a donkey, but the next generation is sterile. They cannot have offspring.
Mm. So this is what we're really talking about when it comes to hybrids, is what would have happened on the farm 100 years ago, where grandma would have said, wow, like there's a really good tomato plant, and there's another really good tomato plant. I'm going to make sure that I keep those seeds, and then when they grow up next year, I make sure they pollinate amongst themselves, so they get more and more of the. And there's a really bad looking tomato plant, so I'm going to get rid of it, so it's out of the gene pool in my little area, right?
Exactly. That's precisely the thing called selective breeding.
Yeah.
That's not genetic modification. Genetic modification is you actually take it into a laboratory and you go right after the genes inside of individual cells and you try to replicate that and make a seed out of that. Essentially, you're bombarding the nucleus of the cell with something else. Like a great example was this soybean that was injected with Brazil nut genes so as to increase the protein content.
In the soy?
In the soy, yes. The idea was that there was this one particular amino acid that was desirable, and they wanted to increase this, its content, and so they raised it using this particular, what shall we call it, a gene. And sure enough, they got more protein in this corn.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a downside to it.
Okay.
People were getting allergic reactions to it. How so? Well, only those that are allergic to Brazil nuts.
Oh.
For some strange reason, that gene transferred into it too much of the nut. Unpredictable, right? Unintended consequences.
Right.
That's actually always an issue here with genetic modification.
So if there was something in, say, the peanut, because some people have very, very violent reactions to peanuts these days,
mm-hmm.
and you said, okay, we're going to take this gene from the peanut and mix it with the gene from the cow, and then we're going to have this better milk, and all of a sudden you've got all these people drinking milk and getting peanut reaction to it.
Yes, that would be the exact scheme. There's a really nice word for it, pleiotropic.
Pleiotropic.
Yeah, pleo, like Pleiades, and tropic as in coming out of. And anyway, it's the unintended or uncontrolled consequence. And interestingly enough, here's a statement from a study. Pleiotropic effects occur in genetically engineered plants at frequencies of 30%.
Oh, so there's some... So this isn't just... Like, we think that this is going to do this, but it may, and it may do this, but it's going to be doing a whole bunch more in addition to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the example is, for instance, genetically modified corn versus traditional corn in Mexico. I watched a whole program, a documentary, showing how the local corn growers are being pushed out of the way and pushed out of business with corporations buying up fields and growing genetically modified corn on it. And it's cheaper, of course, right? The logical thing, it is cheaper corn. So people are thinking, well, we're buying cheaper corn so we can eat tortillas for a lower price. But what they're not understanding is that that they're actually increasing their chances of creating nutritional problems, even worse. Who knows what's going to happen down the line? Anyway, the issues were corn stalks growing funny, you know, like you could see deformities.
Mm.
You could see, I don't have all the details of what all was going on, but you could see that the genetically modified corn was showing a lot more trouble than the old ancient corn as far as how it was growing. Now, the problem that was happening was this. Corn is pollinated by the wind, meaning corn pollen just flies on the wind and pollinates.
Right.
Well, if you plant a 100-acre or 10-acre plot of genetically modified corn and the wind blows east one day and south next day and north next day, everything in your neighborhood has become pollinated with your genetically modified corn.
And then it becomes genetically modified.
Yeah, it's just polluting the pool. Right?
So what we're talking about here is a Pandora's box. Once you open it up, it could be spreading and spreading and spreading, and the next thing you know, you're hooped.
That's right.
It's kind of like one of the things that I know a biologist here in BC, and we'll go for a walk along the river or whatever, and she's constantly pointing out what she calls invasive species.
Mm-hmm. Some of these not native.
Not native, and they're taking over. And one is bloom, and it's kind of it's hard to kill, and it comes from Scotland. And it has this yellow flower, which this people from Scotland thought were very pretty in Scotland, right? Mm-hmm. And so when they came over here, they wanted to bring some of their home with them. So they brought bloom seeds, I assume, perhaps plants, and they planted them. And, of course, you know, the seeds would just kind of spread and grow, and this was a great place for it. And it started, now it's all over the place, right?
Yeah, no natural predator or animal that would eat it or something that would limit its growth, so it just grows and grows, right?
That's right. And the sad thing is like, I didn't know that. And, you know, I'm not a biologist or anything else, but in one generation, everyone will just be saying, well, that's a native plant, right? Realizing, you know, that there were a whole bunch of other beautiful plants that we no longer see because they've been pushed out by the bloom.
Yeah, crowded out.
Crowded out. And so that's, you know, I can see that happening. And then, of course, this is not genetically modified or anything else. But when you look at genetically modified foods and it's able to spread of its own, kind of like a virus, now all of a sudden you can't put it back.
That's right.
Along the Rio Grande River near Santa Fe is another invasive species. And this species of tree, this very small tree, it consumes about, I can't remember what the person, like 200 gallons of water a week or a day or something, right? So the Rio Grande, which has this, you know, I mean, this is desert, right? Had a lot of water. They had someone had planted this along the river thinking it was very pretty and beautiful and everything else. And then it just kept, went up one way, it went up river, went down river, went all over the place. And it doesn't matter what you do, if one little cell of it is left in the soil, it'll grow back, right? They cannot kill it.
Sort of like bamboo, Once it gets going, it's just no getting rid of it, yeah.
So this huge, massive river is just a trickle most of the time because it's being drunk by these very, very thirsty trees that they can't get rid of, and, you know, and they can't control and everything else. And, of course, water is, as we've talked about before, a major, major problem. So, and these are just kind of taking something that is in naturally the way it is from one environment and sticking it into another environment and having massive negative consequences. Because
here's a good example of that. In 1886, a pair of starlings was brought to New York from Europe and was released in Central Park, New York. Until that time, North America was starling-free.
Oh. And now we have them all over the place.
Oh, I don't know if you, you know, like for instance, Northwest Canada, Southwest Canada, in the Northwest to everyone else, is growing a lot of berries. You know, the blueberry farmers and cherry farmers and all of that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember what happens during the harvest season when the berries and fruits come nearly ripe and these black clouds of starlings start flying in and the farmers blowing their propane guns and playing their distress tapes and trying every sort of a thing to push the birds to not land in their fields and all the netting that they tried to put on and everything else.
Well, we should just genetically modify the berries so that when the birds eat them, they become sterile and they don't have kids, and then that gets rid of all the starlings.
Yes, and here comes the famous word, pleiotropic.
Does that have on humans? We eat it.
Right. So, okay, maybe it could be a gene that makes birds sterile, even if we found it, right?
Yeah.
And so we eat it, and in third generation, it will make your children blind.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not in second, but in third generation. So you won't notice it for a good while until it's all over the place, everywhere.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, everyone's blind and no one knew.
Yeah, something like that. I'm not saying that that's exactly how it would happen, but it's these unintended consequences.
Right. This is kind of like there's a story where every time someone did something to fix something and make it better, the result was it got worse.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in kind of that area right now because we have companies spending billions and billions of dollars. One of the companies in the examples you were talking about was, I believe it was a Japanese company, and they had a whole bunch of problems with the changes that they did. There was about 150 people died. No, 37 people died because this thing was released without safety tests. 1,500
You must be thinking of the tryptophan disaster.
The tryptophan, that's right, yeah. 1,500 people were disabled, and the manufacturer paid $2 billion. They were Japan's third largest chemical company, and they destroyed evidence preventing further investigation and made a $2 billion. Like, it was like, how bad is it that you destroy all of the evidence so people can't really see what you've done? And how can... it just boggles my mind that you would create something and then knowingly put it out there with the understanding that it's going to cause, you know, death and destruction.
People do strange things when threatened with economic disasters. It reminds me of drowning, you know. When people drown, they really don't make rational choices anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to go there. But tryptophan is an interesting concept because tryptophan was banned in the United States at one point because it caused, I think it was one death and 14 serious injuries or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it was banned was that this Japanese manufacturer that was making this tryptophan was using genetically modified bacteria to grow this amino acid. So there's nothing wrong with tryptophan itself. It's just that the tryptophan made by this company that was using genetically modified bacteria was making faulty tryptophan.
Oh, I see.
That was killing people. Anyway, so subsequently, tryptophan was taken off of the banned list. But that was an ugly story, anyway. It caused a lot of trouble in the health industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, for sure.
So I want to just stay on this unintended consequences.
Okay.
I think that when we're playing God, I would say something like this. If I try to compare a pharmacist or a geneticist or a food biological engineer with God, I think God wins. And so it's just that we don't really have the luxury of allowing natural selection to play here, because if we allow that, it may mean the wipeout of the humans or some other species. Just in the process of sorting all of this out. Normally this works slower, you know, over many generations, as opposed to, like, quick with the way this engineering can do it. And so there's no chance of adjusting to it. You know, if something gets out into the food chain and it gets out worldwide within 15 years, it's the single same generation of people that's going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's not gradual. There's no getting adjusted to it. It could just wipe out millions or billions. Anyway.
Well, it's almost like putting a nuclear bomb in the hands of terrorists all over the world.
Yeah, I would say that's a reasonable suggestion.
And it may sound a little alarmist, but when you think about it, I mean, like one of my concerns is the bee population. Bees go around and they help us out by pollinating plants and flowers. And
that's
now
right.
There's this business of bee hive owners just taking their hives from farm to farm and letting them go and pollinate in those areas because there's no natural bees left. And one of the things that they say is it potentially could, I don't think that they've proven what it is, but the genetically modified foods, one of the reasons people, they do it, is to make them resistant to pests, insects and everything else. And what will happen is when the insect bites into the plant, the cells that have been genetically modified have a very toxic pesticide in them that just kind of blows up, you know, destroys the pest and keeps the plant healthy, or keeps the plant from being eaten by the pest. And normally this, you know, this amount for humans and everybody else is insignificant, but you know, when you look at the when you look at the impact that it has on, say, all of a sudden it gets, you know, into the bees or into the pollen or whatever, and then it gets into the hive, and then all of a sudden the bees all die because they've got this highly concentrated poison now in their hive, mm-hmm. And then they die, and nobody knows where the bees are going or what's happening with them or anything else. And that's just, I've just told you one theory that I've read, but you know, they're talking mm-hmm. about in 3 or 4 or 5 years there'll be no food, because, or the biggest job that we will have will be, you know, people going around with something and pollinating plants because there's no bees.
Imagine. Yeah. Imagine going around with a little paintbrush and a tiny little bucket pollinating each of your cherry trees in your orchard, one blossom at a time.
Yeah. So, you know, that's going to be an incredibly cheap way to make food. You know, like, it's just absolutely insane. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah. Well, just to raise another example. So there's this product called Roundup Ready. I think it was Roundup Ready tomato, was it? Don't remember which plant it was. But the point is that Roundup Ready means this. The plant is resistant to Roundup, which is a herbicide. Herbicide is a universal plant killer. You would normally use herbicide on something like your dandelions or other things that you want to kill off in your lawn, selectively. When you put it on the leaves of the plant, it gets absorbed into the tissue, taken to the roots, the whole plant dies. So if you have a Roundup Ready plant, that plant will survive the Roundup while its neighbors will not.
Okay.
So you plant your stuff, wait for it to start growing, and then spray the whole field with Roundup. So that means the next step is all the not ready for Roundup plants die off, and your Roundup Ready plants that you have in your field will survive and start growing.
Nice.
Hallelujah. I mean, isn't that glorious? So far, so good. But
don't
what
tell
happens?
Me. Let me guess. There's an unintended consequence.
There probably is. We don't know what it is yet. Don't know what's going to pick it up, where it's going to take it. I don't know if it's some insect that's going to pollinate the Roundup Ready plant, take it somewhere, cross-pollinate something else. I don't know. I mean, maybe that same insect that has pollinated your, tomato plants is next going to pollinate some sunflowers. And next thing you know, you're experiencing Roundup Ready sunflower.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good thing. I doubt that it is. How about this one? This one is my favorite. This one is thankfully only restricted to North America. Europeans have completely steadfastly resisted doing this. It's called RBGH, which is genetically modified or altered growth hormone for bovines. That's injected into dairy cows, and that actually enhances their milk production.
Okay.
You know, IGF-1 is what goes up. That's a hormone. And it helps the cows to get more milk, right? So that makes the milk cheaper in the long run because the cows give more milk and so on.
Increased production.
Yeah, increased production, lower cost on all of that. The problem we have is that if you get IGF-1 into humans, you 2 to 4-fold the risk of cancer.
Ouch.
So it could be that the higher cancer rates in North Americans is caused by them drinking.
One potential cause could be this.
Yeah, it's them drinking RGBH-treated cow's milk. And the studies have been done. They have shown that this is indeed the case. We have documentation, and the Europeans are resisting it, saying, no, 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 there will be no RGBH in our cattle. And the Americans are taking it to the World Trade Organization, saying, you are putting up unfair trade barriers. You should allow our beef to come into your market. And they're saying, no, 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 this is a legitimate concern. Ay, ay, ay. Not a pretty picture.
No. So I think we're going to have to do another show on this, Martin.
I don't know. It makes me feel so miserable. I don't know that I want to. there are so many issues that are pointing at this. Number one, there is just no way that we can test for all the side effects and unintended consequences that this thing can bring.
Yeah.
If it deals with the plants, it's through the world of insects and through the world of seeds. If it's in the world of animals, it's through the whatever we eat or whatever they produce. Or, you know, I mean, what happens when RGBH-injected cow eats some genetically modified soybeans, and then that poop from that cow goes into the field as manure to fertilize the next generation of alfalfa?
Yeah.
Is that alfalfa going to be unaffected by this genetically modified soy as processed by a
cow?
Injected cow? I just don't know.
It's hard to imagine that it isn't. And, you know, what if it runs off in the rain and runs off into the creek and into the river and into the ocean and gets, you know, drunk or exposes to fish that are going by? And that fish gets caught, and then you eat it, and now all of a sudden, what?
Yep. All of a sudden, yeah, you're having an allergic reaction to soy oil.
Yeah, to soy oil, then you're not eating any soy oil, you're eating your fish.
Yeah. I don't know that is truly possible, but the frightful thing is that the scientists have no way of knowing.
Yeah.
And it's just wrong to be doing this sort of manipulation. It's creating
particularly when
monsters.
It's not necessary.
Absolutely not.
Not necessary. I mean, we can manage the. There's a dollar figure, right? And and that's what they say is driving it. We want to make it cheaper. We want to make more. We want to do this. We want to do that. But the fact of the matter is that part of the problem is for the last 100 years we've been dumping fertilizers onto our breadbasket states and provinces and everything else in order to get crop yields up, and we haven't been managing the soil properly. And so we're in this downward spiral. And if we were taking all of the food that we were throwing out that could be composted and composting it and putting it back into the land to grow our food, I think we'd be way better off.
Right, yeah, biodynamic soil management would certainly improve both the quality and the health, of the produce that we grow.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
My concern is with the genetically modified food is this. The benefit is driven by the ability to patent or to control the outcome. Because when you have a genetically modified species, you can actually own it. You know, like you can patent a particular sheep, or you can patent a particular seed, and you can hold it as a unique and charge premium for it. And that's what's driving this, because it's causing the ordinary farmer to be wanting to do business with the higher yield or the more advertised crops.
Well, and it's also putting a lot of pressure on the farmers, because there was a legal case in Canada, where they said you're growing and saving our seeds, and we can prove that you've got your crop is from our seeds, and that's against the licensing agreement or whatever. Like, they're not allowed to save the seeds and use them over and over again, which is kind of weird. But they can do that because they say it's our seed, right?
Mm-hmm. And the funny thing was that the court actually sided with the corporation.
Yeah, well,
saying that the farmer actually did transgress and was using their seed against the wishes of the corporation.
Yeah,
and the funniest thing is he actually took them to court for contaminating his field.
Right. Yeah, because he said it was blown across from neighboring fields. So this is not something that you can keep separate.
Right. But what's interesting is he actually won a court case against them, and they are now obligated to remove all of their plants from his field if they should ever be found.
Right.
But anyway, it's a complicated situation.
Yeah, and it gets in the way of the farmers farming, which is another problem. Mm-hmm. You're spending way too much time trying to do this magical hocus pocus with stuff that you don't know what will happen with it, instead of making the best food that you can make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just to mention, the famous soybean. We have been trying to find non-GMO soy. Mm-hmm. Well, first we could find some non-GMO soy in North America. Then it just became completely contaminated, so it's no longer available. So then in South America, we were able to get it from Argentina, and that has now become contaminated. So all of South America is now completely contaminated by genetically modified soy.
Wow.
So the last thing that we can now do is to order a product it's called species specific, meaning that they test it and make sure that it is the original soy genes, not the GMO soy genes.
Hmm.
That's what we're able to do. But no farmer can now claim that they are GMO free, because it just blows on the wind and it's everywhere.
Right. So if GMO was not kosher, there'd be a huge problem with that part of our population.
Well, yeah, you may as well declare that, because it's non-God. Yeah, it's ungodly work. So I don't know of any rabbi who's going to certify genetically modified as kosher.
Right. And if it's genetically modified just because it got contaminated, how long before nothing is the way it was originally?
So now what do we tell people then?
Well, one thing I was going to say is here are some companies that are GMO producing or distributing, and if you have shares in them, then do a shareholder protest, and if you don't have shares in them, then consider not buying their food. And that is, here's the list: Safeway, Frito-Lay, Kellogg's, Nestle's, Heinz, Healthy Choice, Kraft, Hershey's, Coca-Cola, Nabisco, Quaker, Starbucks, McDonald's, General Mills, Procter & Gamble. If that doesn't sound like the top echelon of
food distribution in America,
I don't know what does, right?
Right. Well, I remember my daughter in her high school did a project which had to do with can we know whether there is or isn't GMO grain in my cereal? So she called all of the major ones, the Nabisco, Kraft, and General Mills, and so on. Not one of them had a policy in which would allow us to know whether the source was or was not genetically modified.
Wow.
So the only choice we could have made was simply boycott all of their products.
Yeah.
Because the only option you have is to buy organic.
That's right. And if you don't,
then you're playing God. You're playing
dice. You're gambling, really, aren't you?
That's right. You're playing a Russian roulette with your children. Because if you haven't had your children yet, the seed, you know, the semen that comes out of you is already going to be processed with this special nutrition that you're ingesting. It's going to be affected by that. Interestingly, the fertility rates are falling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be solved one way or the other, right?
Yes.
Oh, dear.
Yes, this is not a pretty picture.
No.
Okay, so the activism. Yes. Number one, find out if your pension plan is invested in the particular companies that make this stuff. Ask your pension plan manager to take your pension money out of those companies because you don't want to support them.
Yeah.
Number two, don't buy their products.
Yeah.
Starve them.
Well, it just blew my mind to see Starbucks on there and some of the other ones. I'm not surprised.
Because they don't care, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a simple thing. It's a cost-driven issue. Starbucks will use something like soy nice, you know, your soy milk substitute, and that's how they get on this list, right?
Yeah. And if you called them up and start, you know, enough people called them up and complained, they would start doing something about it, I know.
They would.
Because they're always looking for, I mean, here's the thing from the marketing perspective, they're always looking for causes. And if they jump on the non-GMO cause, I mean, I can see a lot of, you know, upper poobahs, you know, arguing and going back and forth. But, you know, it wasn't that many years ago that, you know, having five or six beer at the bar and then driving home was not an issue, right? Finally, enough moms got mad because their kids were getting run over by drunk drivers that now it's, like, really not considered good. And it's happened over and over and over again where people have stood up and said, you know what, we got to be counted here, and so this is your chance. Call them.
That's
in fact, they all have 1-800 numbers, and on the blog post or the podcast post, at lifeenthusiast.podomatic.com, I will make sure that they were all there. Safeway, Frito-Lay, Kellogg's, Coca-Cola, Nabisco, all Starbucks, McDonald's, and just call them up. Oh, McDonald's doesn't have a 1-800 number. It's the only one. But they all have 1-800 numbers, so phone them up and say, you know what? I want to know if there's GMO in the food. You know, what about your private label stuff? Is there GMO foods in there that I should know about?
Yeah, the cows that you grind up, are they RGBH free?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to get cancer from your RGBH loaded beef, you know?
That's right. And then they go, what are you talking about? Just tell them to go listen to the Life Enthusiast Co-op podcast, online radio network shows, and they'll understand.
Oh, yes. There's Don Quixote tilting at windmills, I tell you.
That's right. Well, somebody has to. Might as well be us.
Okay.
All right. So, Martin, if somebody wanted to discuss health issues or GMO issues or what they should be eating issues, how can they get a hold of you?
Oh, come and read www.life-enthusiast.com or 1-866-543-3388. Call us. We're here. 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific time. This is Life Enthusiast Co-op. We restore vitality to you and to the planet.